Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I want you to know that the mothership has landed.
It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
What's up, my brother? I want permission to come aboard the mothership.
Asking permission to join a sports talk spaceship? Well, we're all a little crazy. The mothership has connected.
The mothership.
Let's come aboard.
Happy Tuesday to you, North America. The mothership has connected. Welcome aboard. It's the three-hour Deflector Shield shindig. DA with you. From the CBS Sports Radio studios in New York City, broadcasting to affiliates nationwide and north of the border, Anchorage to Atlanta, Chicago to Sheboygan, Kalamazoo and Waterloo, we are on the air.
They listening, D.A. Everything we saying, D.A. Everything.
And we come to you live from the Quicken Loans studios. National mortgage lender Quicken Loans. Apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently. How is everybody doing out there? It's a trash Tuesday, which means we are taking out the trash. What is eating you, Gilbert Grape? What is bothering you? Who do you want to trash? What do you want to vent about? That's why we're here. It's really a community service. And so we will take out our trashes coming up here in 35 minutes from now. But your trashes are welcome throughout the entire show. DA, DA, pick me. Well, you can call us up at any point over the course of today's show, and you can take out your trash by dialing us at 855-212-4CBS. I mean, if you are a Saints fan, if you are a Chiefs fan, if you are anybody but a Patriots fan or a Rams fan, you have so many reasons to vent, so many reasons to be upset, so many reasons to get this off your chest. And I do this because I do feel like verbalizing your frustrations is a healthy way to move through it. This is kind of a benign way to get something off your chest. And so this is your space. Call it your safe zone. We will do our trashes coming up here in about 35 minutes from now. You can also tweet at me your trashes. Bring me your trash. DA on CBS.com.
Boom. Trashed.
Boom, baby. Coming up this morning on the show. How about former WWE star Christian, who will join us coming up next hour on the show? Miraz, is this in studio?
Unfortunately, it is not. Ah. We have a lot of night fight tapings coming up. Could not make it happen in studio.
So Christian, former WWE star, is now the host of a reality show called Night Fight. And
correct.
Night Fight is people dressed up as medieval knights fighting one another.
Yes, I can only assume this is the History Channel's version of going right at the Masked Singer.
So the day after the autopsy performed on the AFC and NFC championship games, still tons of NFL news to dig into. Golden State and Klay Thompson go off last night. You had Sixers and Rockets. You've got Mariano Rivera, perhaps the first ever unanimous Hall of Fame selection for Cooperstown. And we are talking Night Fight here on the show today on Tuesday, January the 22nd, 2019.
I did decline Art Garfunkel today.
No, you didn't. Don't you ever do that.
I would never.
I want I Art never. Beck on the show so bad.
I would never.
Coming up this hour on the show, we've got the ref assignments for the Super Bowl. An interesting stat behind them. Should we care about who's reffing this game? Next hour, Michael Thomas of the Saints banging the drum on an article of the rule book in the NFL that says you can reverse an outcome. What would it take for the NFL to reverse an outcome like the NFC Championship game? We've also got your best audio of the day, and that includes Dee Ford on becoming a expletive in Kansas City. In the third hour of the show, the NFL has released its international series schedule, and I will pull out my hair yet again. It's an annual rite of passage here on the DA. And the Dolphins are working out and looking into a quarterback to draft. We will tell you which one coming up in hour number three. All of that coming up this morning on the DA show.
Aw, the DA. I love the DA.
But let's begin in Philadelphia because an interesting article, interesting column written in Philly Voice about how Carson Wentz, not the most popular guy inside that Eagles locker room. We know the backdrop here. The backdrop is Carson Wentz was en route to an MVP season last year, 2017, before he tore his ACL in Los Angeles late in the year. Nick Foles took over. Everything felt lost. The Eagles were looking for their first Super Bowl championship ever, and then the franchise went down. More headaches, more nightmares for Eagles fan. And suddenly the White Knight, Night Fight, Nick Foles took over and rode the stallion into the Super Bowl with miraculous performances in January, with a Super Bowl MVP performance last year against the Patriots. And they build statues and throw parades and name their kids after Nick Foles. This year, Carson Wentz remained the starter, and the offense stinks, and the team is losing. And he's 6-7 when he goes down again with injury, and again the season seems lost. And Nick Foles takes the reins, and the offense catches fire. And everything runs smoothly and more polished, and they win football games, they win a playoff game, and they come within an eyelash of winning in New Orleans. It's not Nick Foles' fault. Alshon Jeffrey misses the pass, deflects off his hands, interception Saints, Eagles go home. But nobody could blame it on Nick Foles. So once again, you've got this evidence that when Foles is in there, the offense is great. When Wentz is in there, the offense is not. And in this article in PhillyVoice.com, it cites multiple sources inside the organization. It says it spoke to more than a dozen Eagles players and multiple sources within the organization. And that with this, all of them anonymous, there was a lot of criticism coming through on Carson Wentz. That Wentz was selfish. That Wentz could bully the coaches. That Wentz didn't want to run plays that worked for Nick Foles because that was quote-unquote Foles stuff. That Carson Wentz locked in on Zach Ertz too many times. That Wentz just did not run the offense as well. And guys actually had a real problem, at least some of them, with Wentz's leadership style. They felt like he was not accountable, that he pointed the finger, and that he was insecure after Nick Foles won the championship last year. Now, after this report was released yesterday, a number of Eagles players publicly came to Carson Wentz's defense and on social media talked about how much they love Wentz. Wentz is a great leader. They're looking forward to moving forward with Carson Wentz. So what to believe? Do we believe that this report about Wentz being selfish and a difficult teammate and a bad leader is legit? Do we believe that the locker room in Philadelphia actually resents Wentz? That the truth is in the anonymous sources of the report and not publicly what those guys said on social media? It is where we begin. Your cold open.
There's a lot of things in here that aren't, and I stated in the story, that aren't revelations. They're not. They're not. They've
well,
been
they
there.
Well, they aren't once you place them in the context that you did.
Okay. Okay. Right? And that's fair. And
so
that's
you're
fair.
Saying that but, there were suggestions by Peterson that Wentz wasn't running the offense he wanted him
well,
to.
Well, Doug basically said, and yeah. it's in the transcripts again, okay. that, you know, when Carson trusts the offense, boom, things work.
I don't believe it!
The most amazing, sensational, dramatic, heart-rending.
It's DA's top story.
Here he goes.
It's your cold open.
That was the writer of the story, Joseph Santoliquito, on with Anthony Cataldi on the morning show on WIP in Philadelphia. Let me give you a few quotes here. From Santoliquito, quote, his aw shucks overgrown Opie from Mayberry routine plays well with the local and national media. But one source said inside the locker room, Carson Wentz's biggest enemy is Carson Wentz. He's had his ass kissed his whole life. He acts like he's won 10 Super Bowls when he hasn't played in, let alone won, even a playoff game yet. Everyone around him wants good things for him. He did more thinking on the field than he did playing this year. You don't have to be a brain surgeon, though, to see how differently this team plays or reacts with Foles instead of Wentz. End of quote. Now, I think that there's a million different ways to dig into this, but here is my read. I think Carson Wentz had the world on a string. He had it in his grasp, and he started feeling the love because the love was obvious. The city fell in love with Wentz. He was the franchise savior. The media fell in love with Wentz. Everything was good, and last year, MVP caliber season, en route to a one seed, everything is cooking. He is feeling like the most popular kid in class. And then poof, it's taken away. And then he watches Nick Foles do what he dreamt about doing. And he's watching Foles get all the accolades that he dreamt of. And while Wentz was publicly a good teammate, I think internally it had to mess him up. How could it not? How could you watch another guy live your dream and it not mess you up a little bit? And I think this year he overcompensated. I think this year he probably came back a little too soon after the ACL. I don't think he was ever right health-wise. I think you saw he was unable to move around and slide around in the pocket the way that he was before the injury. I think he was unable to get out of the grasp of defensive players like he was before that. We talked about this before. He had a much higher sack rate than Nick Foles did this year. He wasn't as slippery. He wasn't as confident. A lot of his passes were underthrown. Didn't really have that structure under him with two strong ACLs to throw. And I think that messed him up. And I think he got insecure because the criticism started coming and people remember the Nick Foles stuff. And on top of it, Nick Foles is a guy that genuinely cares about others. I'm not saying Wentz doesn't, but when you have to pit one versus the other and you're a wide receiver inside that locker room and Wentz is underthrowing you or he's checking down to Zach Ertz a million times because he's maybe insecure about his health or that's just the comfort level, you begin saying, well, everything runs better with Nick Foles. And Nick Foles is also there being this incredibly classy, generous, forthcoming guy that I think earnestly cares about other people more so than probably many professional athletes. And I think this all just got a little distorted. And then Nick Foles, from a football standpoint, comes in and just starts running the offense more efficiently because Foles doesn't play favorites. Foles has probably got to be more calculated in everything he does within the offense because he's not as physically gifted as Carson Wentz. So he's got to go through the progressions, and he's got to run the play the coaches are saying, and he's got to go to the open man, no matter who it is. And then everybody on that team starts going, oh, well, we're running better. It's smoother. And there's no kind of insecurity. There's no clashing. There's no, well, this is the way that we used to do it. It's just executing a game plan. And that's exactly what the Eagles needed this year by the end. I don't want to paint Carson Wentz as a terrible guy because I don't think he's a terrible guy. Do I think he was probably difficult at times this year to coach and play with? Yes, because I think internally the Super Bowl run with Foles had to mess him up a little bit. But I still think the right move is going with Carson Wentz long term. Wentz, I believe, can win those guys back in that locker room. I think right now the wound is raw. They love Foles. I think he can do it. Remember, before Foles comes in last year, Carson Wentz is an incredibly popular guy in the locker room and that city and the NFL. I think he can do it, but he's going to have to shed the insecurity of not winning that Super Bowl. And maybe with Foles out of the locker room, once he's traded or released and he signs elsewhere, maybe that will be what Foles needs, or I should say Carson Wentz needs. Foles gone so that he really takes control once again, and there's no looking over your shoulder of a guy that other guys like maybe a little bit better personally or professionally. But I think there's a lot of truth in this article. It just happens that the time feels like maybe a hit job, but I don't consider it a hit job. I feel like there's a lot of truth in here. It would make a lot of sense. It seems logical. 855-212-4CBS. 855-212-4227. Hit us on Twitter as well, DA on CBS. When we come back, we've got the ref assignment and the record of the ref assignment for the Super Bowl when the Patriots and Rams play with this ref. Should we care? How much should we care? DA, CBS Sports Radio.
Now get zapped while the sun is out.
Sounds like a DA bit coming up.
All right, bring the hot Cheetos in here now. Bring them in here. Open up the door to the mothership. Beam me up the hot Cheetos and Marash.
That is like spot on, man. That is spot on.
DA on CBS Sports Radio.
Thank you, Boomer. Thank you, Gio. Welcome back. DA with you here on CBS Sports Radio on a Trash Tuesday. Please send me your trashes by tweeting at me, DA on CBS, or holler at me on the phones, 855-212-4227. Also, a reminder, you can listen to the show on your phone. Of course, you can listen to the great CBS Sports Radio Network and all of our awesome affiliates. And SiriusXM Channel 206. But you can also check out the show by downloading the CBS Sports app and listening there, the radio.com app, or Apple Music. And of course, you can watch the simulcast on any device, watchda.com.
Electronically ignorant.
Should we care about the ref assignments? This has become a bigger deal, I would say, in the last couple of years. I think maybe specifically the last calendar year. This has become a big deal in the NFL. It never really was. It was much bigger in the NBA. I think the NBA's officiating has been under scrutiny for so many years, just like the NFL. And so because of this kind of deep dive analytics wave that has washed over basketball, I think because there's so many blogs, so many websites, so many social media people, so many kind of observers of the NBA that have troves of analytics and data at their disposal, you have kind of this cottage industry of crunching numbers, even from people that aren't employed by the NBA. And we started to learn via social media, via online websites, about the records of teams when certain referees ref their games. And I will, to my grave, believe that David Stern, who was always, always concerned about the marketing of the star and the popularity of the league, and specifically how to market the league, I will always believe that David Stern had a vested interest in the types of refs that refed specific games. I would never go so far to say he put refs in positions to tank the game or the fix was in. I'm not saying he told refs, hey, you need to make sure the Lakers win this game, or make sure the Celtics win this game, or make sure this team wins to push to a game seven. I wouldn't suggest that. I would say there was an awareness within the NBA's front office how specific officials officiated against specific teams or at certain venues, and we placed them strategically in those spots to potentially get the outcome that is best for the NBA. And that is also how you build a multi-billion dollar complex from a league that played its NBA Finals games on tape delay in 1980. Those are the types of things you have to do to make it the monster that it is today. And so I think now we're starting to get there with the NFL of, oh, what are the records of these refs or of the teams when the refs ref their games? And we learned last week about Cleet Blakeman, who was the lead official on the AFC Championship game. And he was the guy that Patriots fans hated after Deflategate because he was one of the guys employed to take the gauge, the measurements of the air pressure of one of the footballs, and did so in inconsistent fashion when Deflategate came up and Patriots fans threw a hissy fit saying, oh, see, the league doesn't want us to win. But as we pointed out, Cleet Blakeman was the head official last year in the AFC Championship game when the officials blew dead a play that could have won the AFC Championship for the Jacksonville Jaguars, a strip fumble going back the other way, and then suddenly there was a whistle out of nowhere. No, the play is dead. You cannot advance that. Sorry. Sorry, Jaguars. Please drive home safely. So you could always probably find two sides of these ref stories. But just so you know, the lead official, the head official, will be veteran John Parry in his 12th season as referee in the NFL, working his third Super Bowl. Not his first. He's had a couple of Super Bowls underneath his belt. So what are the records of these two teams? Well, in 2018, this season, the Patriots lost their only game when Parry has been the official. The Rams won both of their games. The Rams were 2-0 this year when Parry was on the sidelines. Patriots lost their only game. All time, the Patriots are 9-5 when Parry is the lead official. The Rams, 7-0. The Rams have never lost a game when John Parry was lead official. Now, if I was less sophisticated, less mature, more petty, more conspiracy theorist type of sports talk host, I might suggest that because the NFL has been so hell-bent on making sure Los Angeles succeeds as a football town, that perhaps the NFL would have a vested interest in the Rams winning a Super Bowl so that all of those luxury suites are sold when the Rams move into their new stadium, and all of those PSLs are sold, and all of those season tickets are bought. And perhaps if I was more of a conspiracy theorist, I would suggest that the NFL would love to see the Rams win a Super Bowl. And it just so happens that John Parry, they are 7-0 when John Parry is the official, happens to be on the sideline with this game. But I'm not going to go so far as to say the fix is in. What I would say is, if you're the NFL, why not avoid this by announcing the Super Bowl official before the Monday after the championship games? Does that not seem ridiculous? Why do we get the announcement only when we learn who's in the Super Bowl? This could be done 2 weeks ago. This could be done after the regular season. The moment the regular season ends, you can grade out all of the officiating crews and say, this is the crew that's most deserving. They're going to be in the Super Bowl, and they never know who's going to be there. But the NFL curiously waits until the day after we know who's in there to then place the officials. I don't understand that. All that does is open up the conspiracy theories. All it does is open up the questions about the integrity of NFL officiating. Look, anybody that argues that the NFL didn't want the Chiefs in there, I think is barking up the wrong tree, because Patrick Mahomes is arguably the most marketable star right now in the NFL. And to suggest that the Saints got screwed because they didn't want New Orleans in there, man, Drew Brees is again one of the biggest stars in the NFL. I think it's hard to believe they specifically did not want those two teams or those two quarterbacks. But let's face it, getting Boston, L.A. looks great for the NFL. The Saints got absolutely robbed on the Roby Coleman no call. The Tom Brady rough of the passer call was a joke of all jokes. And officiating in both games was questionable at best. So all you're doing is fanning the fire, fanning the flames by announcing who is going to be the officials this close. I mean, come on. Come on. And all right, even if they announced it last week, do it after the regular season before you know the Final Four. Don't do it last week. Don't do it yesterday. It looks like they announced this last week. Fine. Don't wait until the Final Four. Don't allow this door to be open now. Do it after the regular season. Don't wait until right before the championship games or right after the championship games, because then it just feeds the flames of doubt. 855-212-4CBS, 855-212-4227. Hit us on Twitter as well, DA on CBS. So they announced this last week. Still too close to the game for my liking. Too close to the game, too close to the matchups being decided for me to feel great about it. Do it the moment the regular season ends. Boom. And now you're out of questioning the integrity of the decision. I'm pretty sure the NBA decides its referees like 5 minutes before tip. You're out there. Have a good game. Go get them, champ. When we come back, we've got your Trash Tuesday. Send us your trashes, DA on CBS, on the phones, 855-212-4CBS.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Now get zapped while the sun is out.
I mean, really, something about your dog, about your cat, about your girlfriend, lack of girlfriend, something. Your mom, your dad, anyone. Give me something a little more juice.
DA on CBS Sports Radio.
We want anything with a lot of juice here on the DA show.
I'm a little wet, a little drippy.
It's a Trash Tuesday, so let us know what you're trashing, who you're trashing. After this weekend's AFC and NFC championship games, I feel like there's a lot to trash. In fact, I did most of my trashing for 3 hours yesterday. So I'm guessing that you guys have plenty to vent about. So dial us up at 855-212-4227. That's a toll-free line brought to you by Geico. Great news. Quick way you could save money switching to Geico. Go to geico.com. In 15 minutes, you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Or on Twitter, the old Twitter machine, get at me, DA on CBS is the handle. Let's begin the proceedings, boys and girls. It's Trash Tuesday.
So, what's eating you?
People that get in the left lane and drive the speed limit.
I gotta trash the NFL, man.
Trash my ex-girlfriend.
You want me to trash that?
Trash Tuesday, my favorite day of the week, not for nothing.
Time to vent. We take it out like the trash. It's Trash Tuesday.
All right, Brad, lead us off. Who are you trashing?
I was out last Tuesday, so it's a week in the making trash. I gotta trash my 58-year-old father-in-law, who last week during the Chargers-Patriots game comes over to my little apartment and decides that he has to show my wife and I a pair of pants that we got him for Christmas that doesn't fit properly. Mm. Okay, no problem. He wants us to return it. The problem is he wore the pants over, wanted to hand them over to us, and forgot to bring pants to go home with. And on top of maybe not going into a bathroom to change or show us what was going on, In the middle of the living room, wings out, guacamole out, chips out, salsa out, trying to watch Tom Brady play the Chargers, this man took off these pants in his whitey tighties in my living room. Mm. I am his son-in-law. Mm. His daughter is right there. Oof. And proceeds to stand up, hand us the pants, and I ask, well, what's next? He called his mother, who he lives with, Danielle's grandmother, to bring him new pants to come change in to come home. Why the man couldn't just hand us the pants? Why he had to show us they didn't fit? Why he couldn't bring other pants? Why he's still wearing whitey tighties? Why he did any of this, I don't know. But I refused to let him sit on the couch. And I even took some pictures that I had to send to other family members and said, this is not okay. So father-in-laws that strip down to their whitey tighties and stand there while I'm trying to watch a football game in their son-in-law's apartment, get lost. You're trashed.
Beep, beep. sanitation just arrived.
So your wife had to run and hide.
She ran a living room in her bedroom, our bedroom, and said, I can't be bothered that you deal with him. He's an animal, I was told. He's an animal.
Why are you trashing the future you?
I would never do that. If I ever have a daughter, I'm not getting down on my skivvies in front of them. He's standing there, you know, and then I'm looking at bulges and stuff. I can't be doing that. And by the way, can we take care of this on a Saturday night? Do we need to be doing this during an NFL playoff game? Luckily, it was a blowout. And he's sitting there dipping a chip in guacamole, you know, with the underwear on. I get lost.
Oh, that's hideous. Dan Silverman is sitting in for Pete the Body Bellotta today. So one of the young diaper D-aliens. Dan Silverman, who are you trashing?
I actually have to trash Pete
for
the way in which he ended up having me take his seat this morning.
Ah.
So yesterday around noon, Pete texted me, hey, I'm not feeling great. Can you fill in for me tomorrow? Not sure yet. I'll let you know. I said, yeah, that's fine. I can do that. He said, I'll let you know by 2. At 2 o'clock, Pete texts me. I'm going to go word for word here. Against my better judgment, I'm going in tomorrow. If I'm still feeling like this, I'll be out Wednesday. I say, all right, fine. If you end up changing your mind, because you already seemed on the fence, let me know by 3:30. Because I had work at another job in the city last night that I was going to drive into. But if he had me working this morning, I didn't want to drive because I was going to crash in the city tonight. And I didn't want to pay to park my car in a garage for more than 24 hours. So around 3:30, I leave. I drive in. 3:45, Pete texts me, hey, can you come in the morning?
So he told you to do something, then bailed on it, then told you to do something again within just a few hours.
Yes.
And after the time in which Dan said, I need to know by, so now Dan is working and is out money because he had to pay to park his car in a garage overnight in the city because Pete had to text him 15 minutes after the deadline that Dan gave him.
So Pete was 15 minutes late of the deadline.
Yes. And by the way, a deadline that was only created because he bailed on taking off the first time.
Taking out the trash.
If he told me at 2 o'clock, then I would have had plenty of time. I'd take the bus into the city, but I have to leave earlier to do that, which I could have done if I'd had enough time in advance.
How big of a faux pas is this by Pete the Body?
As far as I'm concerned, Pete owes him the price of the garage overnight in Manhattan. I think he does. Hmm. Although Dan could have said no at that point, and Pete would have been screwed. Dan helped him out, and it's money out of his pocket. He's losing money by being here.
He's losing money because Pete was wishy-washy.
Not quite. My way of looking at it was I'm still making more money by being here than the cost of the garage.
Right.
So it's still a net positive, just not quite as big of a positive as it could have been.
See, I would have liked Pete making the call to change again, like, later on. The fact that he made it at 3:45 when you said for 3:30 means he could have decided 15 minutes earlier and done you the favor of getting your, you know, getting your deadline hit. If it was like 8 o'clock and he went all of a sudden took a turn for the worse and then you were stuck like this, I actually feel okay for Pete. But now it's like, dude, just he asked you for 3:30. Do him the favor. 3:45 is almost like Pete being annoying on purpose.
I smell a PGP.
Another one about Pete?
That will be taped later on today that I've got a feeling will revolve a lot around Pete the Body Bellotti and his current role at CBS Sports Radio. Andrew Bogish, who are you trashing?
DA, I was driving Saturday night in, what was it called? Winter Storm Harper?
Harper, yeah.
Had a name,
yeah.
Right, didn't it? Which is annoying unto itself. Driving north from Delaware back up here to New York City. The entire ride, in a fairly significant amount of rain, the bottom third of New Jersey, the highway has no light, so it's dark, it's pouring, there's puddles of water, water spraying everywhere, coming over the divider, terrible driving conditions. Yet more people than not insist on driving normally in weather like that. The speed limit's 65. I'm doing 65, yet I got guys driving right up to my tail. Right, like, dude, we don't need to go this fast. Slow down. Go around me like normal. But it's like this is significant weather. Relax. Go slow. Let's all get safely where we need to go. And there's no need for you to be doing 80 through puddles of water while it's pouring rain in the dark.
Mm. That's a pretty dangerous situation that you put yourself in. I think it's time to trash them.
You're so trashy.
Do you think it was Pete racing to work?
No, I don't think Pete's ever raced to work.
Okay.
So in a nice Dodge, he would.
Pete would have taken off from work to not drive in the rain.
I am trashing Patriots fans that play the victim card. This is the most hysterical thing ever. Of course, we all know I wear my heart on my sleeve. We know where I stand. I'm sick and tired of the Patriots. I feel like this is just totally gratuitous at this point in time. It is total gluttony. It is the fattest guy on the block that continues to eat and eat and eat when everybody else is starving. I find this to be ridiculously annoying, aggravating. I'd like to see new fan bases chase the nectar of success. When the Cavaliers finally won in 2016, to me, that's one of the great sports moments ever. When the Kansas City Royals won a World Series a couple of years ago, I thought it was awesome for that town and that city. When we have teams, when we have towns, the Seattle Seahawks a couple of years ago, finally winning their first Super Bowl, to me, that is the essence of sport. And for the Patriots to continuously be there is obviously aggravating. It's annoying. It's predictable. To me, I'm sick and tired of them. But I can respect that the Patriots are this good for this long. What I can't respect is any time the Pats fan needs to snap into victimization. Everybody roots against us. Everybody hates us. We don't get any calls. The NFL doesn't like us. Blah, blah, blah. I pointed out yesterday that I thought the overtime rules were bunk. I think the overtime rules are silly because both teams should be mandated to touch the football in an overtime of a playoff game. If you are worried about player safety in the regular season, that's one thing. When it comes to the playoffs, deciding a spot in the Super Bowl, both teams should be mandated to touch the football once. And I pointed out yesterday on the show, as you heard, that I felt whoever won the coin toss, the AFC Championship game, was going to win that game. Because the Patriots weren't stopping Patrick Mahomes, 24 points in the fourth quarter, and the Chiefs clearly weren't stopping Tom Brady, and they didn't. So what you had was a spot in the Super Bowl decided by flipping a coin. And it happened that the Patriots won the coin toss. And that was the flip of the game. That was what just ended up happening because, to me, it was very evident whatever quarterback got that was going down the field and scoring a touchdown at that given point in time. And so when I point this out, especially on social media, Patriots fans will immediately snap into, well, the Saints won the coin toss. The Saints won the coin toss, and then look, as though, see? But that's missing the point. Both teams touched the football in overtime. And that was a game that was 20-20, not a frolicking, rollicking offensive shootout in the fourth quarter like the AFC Championship game. It was a totally different game. And anybody that suggests I'm Johnny come lately on this, as I pointed out yesterday, I've been talking about this for a decade, dating back to the 2008 wild card round, when Peyton Manning and the Indianapolis Colts didn't touch the football because the Chargers went down the field in the opening possession of overtime and won the game with a touchdown to Darren Sproles. And I said at that point in time, this is ridiculous. Both teams in a playoff game should be able to touch the football. And maybe the first team scores 7, and so thus the second team needs to go for 2. And that's fine. That's fair. But to work your entire year and then play 4 quarters of football, and then the luck of the draw is flip of a coin, and whoever wins the flip of the coin will win, to me is ludicrous. And any Patriots fan that plays victimhood here, well, they should have stopped us. You damn well know if the shoe was on the other foot and Patrick Mahomes went down the field and scored a touchdown, Patriots fans would say, both teams should get the football. But they won't, because they'll say, well, what about the Saints? What about the Saints? No, and I'll be perfectly honest here. While I can't stand the Patriots, and I wish they were not in the Super Bowl, and I'm sick and tired of this thing, I will say I would have said the same thing, because I've been talking about this for a decade. If the Patriots lost the coin toss, and Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs went down the field and scored, I would have been happier, but I would have said the same thing. It's ridiculous that we decide playoff games based on a coin toss. So I'm sorry. Stop playing victim, Patriots fans. We ain't hearing it.
Must be Trash Tuesday.
855-212-4CBS. That's the phone number. Trashings, 855-212-4227. Joe is in Maryland listening on CBS Sports Radio's 1300. Joe, who are you trashing?
Morning, DA. Boy, have I been waiting for this Tuesday, because I'm in law school. I pay about $250 each textbook. And get this, here's the kicker. By the time the semester ends, they've made a new edition of the law school textbook, and I got $1,000 worth of textbooks that I can't sell or do anything with. So I am trashing anybody involved in making new law school edition textbooks. Hot trash to you all.
Epic trash job.
This happened to all of us in college. I don't know about Marazka's. I'm not quite sure the quality of your textbooks or your classes.
I can't lie. There were times I didn't buy the textbook and fake that I had it.
Exactly. Yeah. But we all went through this. You buy the textbook, and then you can't sell it because they've already come out with a new edition.
What a scam college in general is becoming. I mean, maybe Sean, again, in the right was right to go to some kind of coloring book school and not waste all this money on crazy things.
In high school, they just give you huge textbooks. Every single year, you get textbooks, textbooks, textbooks. Now you start paying to go to college thousands, tens of thousands of dollars, and now you also have to pay for your $250 textbooks as well.
Yep, that you can't give anything back to, that you got to keep and just eat.
Oh, this textbook is $94 this semester.
Why?
And how much can you sell it for? $350.
Yeah. It's like buying a calculator in high school.
No, that was useful.
Vince tweets, I'm trashing people who sit in the right-hand turn lane for the whole light. Come on, I got places to be.
Someone just got trashed.
More trashes. And the act of God rule in the NFL rulebook.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.